kind of getting to like this song. I'm kind of getting to like it, to let it play first before I talk over it. This is Luca Maino. We are back with Learn to Unlearn again, and I'm happy to be back. And I'm going to do the introductions with everybody as soon as the music stops. But for right now, I hope y'all have a smile on your face like I do. And yes, I have to start the timer. And we have the last round of the music. There she is, there she blows, there she was, and there she goes. Oh, that was cute. That must have been in Maritime Newfoundland somewhere that I just said that. I completely forgot what I just said, but I'll have to listen to it again. They go in twos. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. You know, in the way Newfoundlanders talk, the Newfies of Canada, that's another name that disappeared. Newfoundland, whoop, gone. Labrador, whoop, gone. Yeah, okay. Well, we are back. Hello to our favorite. Is it really true he's the world's super producer, the best producer in the world? That would be Steve, the one I am here with right now.
Well, I'm the only one you have.
Oh, don't blow it for me, please. No, you are like among the best. Let's just say super producer. Yes, Steve is with us. And it's good to be back. Hello to everybody in the chat, and hello to Annie. And it's really cool because I'm sitting here relaxing and trying to relax, okay, before the show starts. And you, of course, you're sitting there going, like, you know, what do I start with? I have so many things to talk about. What do I start with? And just like it happened with the station fire and the time of the event and the dedication to the event, same thing again happens with Rick's passing, which is tomorrow, the date of Rick's passing, which is tomorrow. So what I'm going to do, full brakes on, right? Shh. And I'm going to dedicate this show to Rick, to Rick's memory, to Rick's legacy, as Annie loves to say. And it's cool because this, if she hadn't said that, you know, and I got up and wrote it down on my calendar in the bathroom, you know, I have a little calendar, really small calendar with all the names on them and, you know, and the dates for all the birthdays. Oh, his birthday. Okay. Oh, that would be better. Oh my God. That makes me feel a lot better. Okay. It's not his passing. It's his birthday. Oh, phew. Okay. That's good. So that changes the whole thing, but I mean, we're going to dedicate it anyway. That's good. Okay, cool. It's just a learning curve. So, because I was like, oh, wow, I got really heavy hearted. And that threw me in a really heavy heart mode to start with. And I wanted to talk about that as well, because I really want everybody in the chat to understand. My grandmother would say to me that when people pass, what happens, the ones that we love, what happens, she believes that they send certain people along to help us with the grieving process, not to replace people. To replace meaning, you know, if you like, for me, okay, and I don't know what's worse, I'm going to say it again, having members of your family that are still alive and that will not talk to you. They absolutely will not. I don't know what's worse than having somebody, you know, pass on. So in my case, you know, I'd like to think that my grandmother, you know, brought people like you along to, you know, help keep me busy, to help me focus on what I'm supposed to do, to help me through the grieving process. See, so it's a loss, but I believe it's the same for Annie. You know, Annie's being presented by, you know, and kept keeping a family going like that with all of you, you know, as a support system. It's so beautiful to see that. And it's an honor to be a part of. So we are going to dedicate this to Rick anyway. And in particular today, because, okay, so that would be his birthday tomorrow. Okay. And there's a lot of stuff that I wanted to touch on because of, there's a saying that says the great hoop has been broken. In Native American tradition, they talk about the great hoop as in humanity, That's what I think. That's my spin. That's my take on it. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to talk about my spin on that. And I say no. The great hoop was broken, according to Black Elk in Lakota country, when most people know about Wounded Knee, when that happened in 1890, December 29th, 1890, when 300 men, women, and children were just gunned down by the U.S. military for no reason, because they wanted to get rid of the Indian nations. And they said the sacred hoop was broken. And I'm like, no, I don't think. I think it can be remended with love, with respect, with understanding, with selflessness. And in particular, with the Japanese art. If anybody's ever heard of that, it's a Japanese art of something being broken, and then you put it back together again, and I'm going to get into that later on. But it's really cool. This whole thing came to me when I was just watching the weather, and they were talking about broken bow in Oklahoma, B-O-W, broken bow. And I was really impressed with the name, and I said, wow, I got to, you know, do something about that broken. It immediately made me think of the hoop being broken. So I wanted to talk about that today in particular, because there's a lot of there's a lot of similarities to it. I really think that the ones who are lucky among us to get close enough with ourselves and to go inner, you know, like innermost journey inside to understand how we work and to stay healthy and to, you know, stay clean and to live a good life. If we're lucky enough to do that, then, you know, we're going to touch on stuff that most people won't be able to even think about. And everything's been hidden from us since what? Birth, basically. And I'm sitting here putting the pieces back together is what I'm doing. So what's slowly eating me up from the inside is the whole world as a whole, just losing its humanity. And it's a choice to lose your humanity. It's a choice. And this is what I wanted to talk about today, because, you know, if we think positive things are going to happen. If we think negative, it could be enough to kill you. So we have to always think positive and always channel our consciousness upwards, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. And this is stuff I might be repeating occasionally, but that's good because that means I'm telling the truth. And I hope you're with me on it. Dr. Roland Christian, a really good he was a good friend of mine when I was around him, when I was with him, and he just disappeared off the radar after that. He's a PhD, and he's repudiating what he has become publicly. He says he wants his 11 years back, and he says that most of the time in his speeches, and he's literally trying now to undo the harm that he's done all of his life, all these years, as a psychologist and as a psychiatrist. You know, how courageous are we? Why aren't we acting? What's the problem? You know, it's like, you know, a nurse sees the first sign of corruption and serious knowledge on a pandemic going on. Why not quit and expose? You know, because, you know, that's not what, no, most people don't do that, Luca. You know, most people are just, they're taught and they're indoctrinated and they're brainwashed. So the way I see it for me, like, especially for me, somebody who slowly learned not to attract attention to yourself, you know, I'm trying to be as honest as I can and as honest as people will allow me to be, right? I don't want to be better than anyone else. I want to be different. I want to leave a mark, and I want to make a difference. My first spiritual teacher, and I had a few, my first teacher told me, he said, if you don't get uncomfortable, you're not going to learn anything. He said, you have to evolve or remain. Okay. If you don't push yourself, your beliefs, if you don't challenge yourself daily, if you don't have fun with it, if you don't strive to be better, if you don't push in order to, you know, get that consciousness effort put into it, nothing will happen. That's what I wanted to talk about earlier. The movement upwards has to be a conscious choice, because the rest of the world's going to try and tear us down and bring us down. And that's not going to happen. Not for me anyway, and not for my friends. So think of it as a big circle. And we're going to touch on the three percenters again in several ways. This is pretty cool. Remember the huge circle I asked people to draw? And the 97% of the people are inside it. They're all comfortable. They're all idle. They're learning nothing. They're just existing, right? Comfortably, doing very little, and blaming everybody else for everything, okay? But the 3%, and I'll tell you in a second about what the number represents, and most of us know it already, the rest of those, the 3%, they're the silent ones on the outside of the circle, getting dirty, getting tired, getting beaten up mentally, forcing themselves into humility, selflessness, and the almighty unlearning of what we've been taught, all the lies. And they're doing all the dirty work, basically, so that they can better serve others. That's the kicker. And you're going to hear another kicker like that probably towards the end of the show. So we can better serve others? Wow. Okay. From their website. Oh, and I got a really funny one, if I can find it. Yeah, for Steve. Steve, if you can see this, I got to show this to you. Okay, so if anybody remembers Ted Gunderson, very quickly, Ted Gunderson was the ex-FBI chief who left and who retired. And when he retired, he got mouthy and he started talking about the New World Order that he heard that was in the making. And he specifically mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League, okay, the ADL, as being two gatekeepers for the New World Order, okay? I'm sitting here looking up for the show. I'm sitting here looking up the three percenters, okay? And what do I see? Right in front of my face, three percenters, two articles, one from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the other one from the Anti-Defamation League, trying to knock them down. Why? Oh, because they're militia, they're anti-government, and they're this and they're that. Oh. What was that line? When the nation loses its conscience, be the conscience of your nation, right? That's what the three percenters were about. There was no more than 3% of the population that would take up arms for the American Revolution. And, you know, there's not many more since, I don't think. It's been the 3%ers that were committed originally to standing against and exposing corruption and injustice. It's hopefully still a national organization of patriots of all races, colors, creeds, religions, backgrounds, ethnicities, and orientations who love their country. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping, you know, because all this peace and love is not gonna cut it, okay? There was only 3% of the population that would take up arms against the people, okay? And if you want to be within the 97%, you're not going to learn anything. If you want to be among the 3% that are going to change things, you know, that's the thing about being the change that you want in this world. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be on the outside of the circle. I'm trying to get, you know, remain uncomfortable, trying to do very difficult research for the tribe. You know, not really being bothered if anybody believes in it or not. It doesn't matter because it's for me. And that's the whole idea. And if it touches one person out there, it's worth it. And that's what I'm going to be able to do for the tribe, as they say. That's why I can sleep at night, because I'm trying to make the world a better place the way I know how. So, you know, evolve, meaning and risk pain and suffering, or or remain, which means in fear, in doubt, in insecurity, the caged animal going around in circles. So it's been a proven fact, and that's how life is going to work. We have to constantly push to grow, like that seed that was stuck in the dark, in the dirt, and it had to just fight its way out. And that's one of the things we're doing. I really think so. You know, that's what I wanted to start the show with, too. The fact that, you know, for the first half of my life, I'm lied to about everything. And I'm expected to go along with it. And then the second part of my life, I'm literally trying to expose and fighting against everything that has happened to me since the beginning. So it's, and you're being martyred, you're being alienated, you're being pushed out of, you don't want to be part of the community anymore. You don't want to be doing what everybody else does. No, thank you. So this is where I'm at. This is, you know, my quandary, as they say. And I have a little wink, wink to change gears because, you know, in the past, I've seen myself like, you know, my girlfriend says, oh, come on, Luca, you know, you got to watch him. He's really, really awesome. And he captivates his audience. And I kind of smiled and I looked at her and my instinct said, no, Luca, it's a waste of time. Don't bother telling her about John Hagee after all you've heard. So just, okay. So I sat down and as I'm sure I've said before, in less than 5 minutes of listening to him, I hear three lies come out of his mouth. Okay. And this is how I learned. It was the best teaching of all. Okay. He lies to his flock. Directly looking at them, okay? Pearl Harbor was a day of infamy, and we should get back at them for revenge. Oswald was the lone shooter from the book depository, and 9/11 was done by Muslims, and we should all get back at them. And I kind of got up. I smiled, stunned, when I was walking away. My mouth dropped open, you know? I mean, it was like, wow, you know? And this is the kicker, because today, oh, actually, it was yesterday. What do I see? Jesus has not returned yet. And I'm like, okay, in case you haven't been wondering why, people just aren't, they aren't giving enough money to us to have him come back, Steve. That's what they said. If you're ever wondering why Jesus is not coming back yet, people simply aren't giving enough money to bring him back. What was that evangelist Jesse Duplantis? That's what he said.
Yeah. Well, I think... I don't know. I don't remember who it was. Oral Roberts said if God didn't give him $8 million, he was going to take him home or something like that.
You know what I mean?
In a private jet, yeah.
Wow. So, you know, this...
I could be off on the evangelist. I don't remember which one it was. I just remember that one. Somebody said something stupid like that.
Yeah. You know, and so... I'm watching that kind of stuff, and you want to hear what I'm into myself, what I'm learning about? Imagine if all the spiritualities of the world and the universe united. How big is that? When every single, okay, we call it a sacred belief system. If every single sacred belief system or spirituality of the world was united, that is apparently when the healing of the planet will come, because everybody will bring the essence of themselves, like their own essence. Each one will bring a crystal, for example. Each one brings its healing. Each one brings its own consciousness. And that's been said about the indigenous tribes, the colors of the world, the rainbows, the different colors of different people. That's when the healing will come, and that's when consciousness will flourish, okay? Not in those weapons. That's how it ends up. Not in those weapons. It would be probably like the other way around. So, you know, in other words, we're going to need some help if we're going to get through this, because there's a handful of idiots that are deciding our fate. And I don't know about you, but I can't see me doing a whole lot about it. It's not a very good feeling to have. So I'm not in a very good place at all. So recently, I've been getting into what Learn to Unlearn was like before. And I want to tell you a story, because Learn to Unlearn comes from way back in 1990s. 2000, actually. It started as a school project. And let's see. Someone had seen me at a presentation. That's what I would do. I would have a presentation in front of the children, and I would have like a marker or a laser, and I would point to the different pictures that I would show, and I would tell the stories about the indigenous and stuff like that. And I remember one time I was at this presentation, and I saw an RCMP officer sitting there, a police officer in uniform, sitting in the back of the room, and then standing after a while. And then that kind of, I forgot about that for a while. And then I saw him later on at a funeral on the reserve next door, where I went to, it was a funeral for a 21-year-old girl, part of the missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada, in New Brunswick, where I was living. And they had allowed me to go to the funeral. I brought tobacco and everything, so it was an honorary thing. And I saw the same police officer again at the funeral, and we both recognized each other. And we started to talk. So, you know, he gives me his number, and I give him my number. And then later on, I get thrown out of the school project because one teacher in her 60s didn't like what I was saying one day and reported me. And, oh, well, that's what happens. After one report, you get canned. Oh, okay. So I got canned. Okay. And at the same time, what was happening was there was a protest going on with Indigenous and non-Indigenous. Okay. The non-Indigenous would go on the water and cut the lobster traps and, you know, cut the lines and then come back before sunrise. And, you know, everybody would know, everybody would see them. They'd all have video, but the RCMP would be out there afterwards. The police would be out there in their boats, and it was all the Indians' fault. And it was the same thing all the time. Okay. But, needless to say that, this police officer and I, we started to talk, and I called him and I asked him, I said, can I come down? This is at the height of the tensions. And he allowed me to come down, and he knew that it was serious. And I knew that, you know, I kind of told him what the seriousness of it was. And this is the first time that I could ever talk to a police officer. Okay. And this is the man with a heart. So I end up going to see him. We end up talking. The officer ends up befriending me in a bigger way. Okay. Now that I look back on it, now that I was ever allowed to see, quite possibly because of his knowledge of what the past of his entity was, you know, the past horrors, the genocidal actions of his own government, maybe he was trying to reach out. So we start talking, and I start suggesting to him about training for his police officers in order to be better for the in the protest and stuff, because I was so much aware of what was going on, and he liked the idea. Okay, so he ends up going to Ottawa, and that's what he told me he was going to do. He said himself that he wanted to be in a better place to intercede with the Indian, to be able to help make a difference and not just put a Band-Aid on something that keeps reoccurring. Those are his words. When he went to Ottawa and the headquarters, the police headquarters in Ottawa, I never heard from him again. All of a sudden, I lost contact with him just like that. It was like one one person that tried to make a difference in his business? Nope. I can see him getting a re-education, or I can see him being posted somewhere else. Or see, this is exactly what would have happened to me. If I would have tried a job like that, your instinct kicks in, your morality kicks in, your morals, that you're, you know, you can't, certain things you will not do, right? And, you know, he kind of gave me enough hope and humanity to want to share that story with you today, because I remembered it, and it had to do with the, you know, the 3%, because he was trying to get out of the, you know, the usual, and I could see a lot of myself in him, and he was trying to, in essence, how can you say that, remend the hoop that's broken. So it was a thought, and it was something very special that I wanted to share with everyone. And when we come back, oh, actually, you know, we can go till the break. That's right, too. Okay, we're closer to the break than I thought. When we come back, we're going to have Rolling Bear Memories. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Kintsugi, K-I-N-T-S-U-G-I, which is the Japanese art of gluing back what was once broken. It's really cool. I just want to throw that out there, because we're talking about healing. We're talking about healing from the abuse and from all kinds of stuff that we've been through. And here's another really good one. Grab a plate and throw it on the ground. Okay, done. Did it break? Yes. Now say sorry to it. I'm sorry. Did it go back to the way it was before? No. Do you understand? That's one of my first teachings, right? And that happens to be a meme from rawforbeauty.com that I've saved over the years. You know, sorry doesn't mean anything. You know, it's the words, you know, the words, they don't mean anything. It's the actions that talk. That's why there's no word for sorry, as far as I'm concerned, in the Mi'kmaq or Rolling Bear's traditional language. There's no word for sorry. It's no, your actions should show that you're sorry instead of talking about it. Talk means nothing, right? Well, wow. So we're going to get into Rolling Bear's stories and my stories that coincide. And we're going to get into a little bit more about what the government, you know, what the government's plan was, and how it's so similar to what's happening now. It's scary. And I'm just really enjoying myself trying to find different ways of, you know, making people see that and making people see this, and how can we put this? Oh, look how this goes together with that, you know? So I'm going from all different directions today, all different, you know, papers that I wrote, and oh, grab a little bit of this. And so it's really exciting for me, and it just reinforces how I feel, and it really helps, because the last few days have been really difficult for me as far as, you know, missing family and, you know, being by yourself and paying the price for what you do and what you know. It's basically what it is. So shows like this are really saving my life in a big way, because it just kind of jumps you out of your, you know, the place where you are, you know, temporarily, and you get to work on stuff that, you know, something different, and it's challenging, and it's also uplifting, and it's great to be back on air again. So we will be right back after TLB Talk commercial, because this is, you know, TLB Talk is going to be a place that's going to be more and more important as we go along, because the censorship levels just going to keep going up. And we hope to see you there, and it's food for thought. We'll be right back.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around, and be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
There it is. And that's where we should be, every single one of us, on tlbtalk.com, writing what we think, and it won't be censored. It will not be censored. So, a couple of other things that are really important and on my mind. And since we've talked about Rolling Bear before, he has memories of the nuns and the nurses at the residential schools. You know, and so do I. But they weren't residential school per se. They were something called the Catholic schools for problem children, if I translated it properly. The only thing that these folks can aspire to, these children can aspire to, is to become menials. That's all they can aspire to. A life of, you know, maybe using a shovel, reading an owner's manual, being a dishwasher or a cook at McDonald's, flipping hamburgers, whatever, right? That's all that the government wanted of the Indian. That was it. To know their place in a society that had no room for them, unless you gave everything up and you became like everybody else. And we know the story, right? So speaking of Rolling Bear, he remembers being forced to partake in casket making, woodworking class, sitting at a bench making small caskets that were just about the size that you were. And after having him run away and being caught, and I have his permission to share this. I might have already, but so this is going to be directly related to me, and you'll see why. One time after being constantly, and I mean constantly, whipped and smacked by this nurse walking by all the time, and he's watching her also smack and beat other people and whip other students, in other words, family, for either for speaking their language or for somebody else or whatever, right? One gets flown across the room for doing something, and you later found out his collarbone was broken because he spoke in his own language. He said, "Pass the bread," to one of his fellow students, okay, his friends. She walks by right next to him with the stick again, and he can kind of see her in his peripheral vision. This time he grabs it, okay? He grabs the stick from her hand and immobilizes it, so she's really holding on tight. And then he whips it away from her, and suddenly he starts giving her a taste of her own medicine. He was 10 years old, okay? He says, "I remember running after her, whipping her every chance I could and hitting her and saying, 'This is for every child that you hurt of my family,' you know," and he was whipping her like that, okay? And she fell down the stairs, and he just stood there on top of the stairs and watched her fall down, and that was the last time he saw her. And it was like, she retired with her scars. And then he smiles after he tells the story, and he says, "Hey, Grandpa says you never start trouble, but you have my permission to finish it." And that's what I did. Well, because of my experience in Europe and the Christian schools for problem children near Chamonix, Switzerland, Yeah, in beautiful Switzerland, that I ran away from several times, but they caught me. I found so many similarities between what I went through there and what the residential schools were like for the Indians across the great waters, like they say, right? You know, having your hair cut and sprayed with DET, perhaps not being told not to speak my language, but being beaten on a regular basis. And I remember one incident where, and I still don't know if it was the administration or the bullies or the gangs or all three, but they, you know, they managed to shut off the heat in my room on one of the coldest nights of the year. And that was just one of the pranks they would do. What became a ritual for a while, three of them would come in and hold me down while the fourth one would wake me up out of a sound sleep and be smearing red hot on my genitals and then running away. Or, you know, the nurses would do whatever with their favorite students in the 1800s or 1700s. You know, it's just incredible what they got away with. Incredibly harsh abuse. But thank God for me, it was everything except sexual abuse. So from the administration, from the nurses, from the nuns, from the Catholic, whoever, it was automatic punishment if you didn't comply. Well, I have a picture here that I'm showing Steve right now of the mountain that I escaped to. And the mountain is called the Teeth of the North, I guess, Les Dents du Midi, the Teeth of the North. It's seven peaks, and it's a huge mountain. And again, just like today, we ignore it. We don't see the beauty of it. We don't respect it and not adore it, but, you know, like just respect it like you would, you know, your Mother Earth, right? No. So you're stuck in this school. And one day I just had it and I ran out the door and I started running. And all of a sudden I kind of knew where I was going and I ran to the top of the hill. And right on top of the hill, there's the mountain that shows up, the huge valley below, and then the valley going back up on the other side, and it's the mountain right in front of you. And the thing of it was the silence. And I'll never forget it. Everything that bothered me just went away. Everything that was, you know, that was of hurt, everything, you know, even my bruises, if I had any, I don't remember, they went away. Everything went away for that 1 or 2, maybe 5 minutes, let's say, of just absolute sheer wonder and awe, A-W-E, okay? And you can't hear anything. It was that one time in the valley where you couldn't hear anybody talk. You couldn't hear a chainsaw. You couldn't hear a car, nothing. Not even a bird, not even an insect. It was so dead silent. It was so beautifully dead silent that your ears are trying to focus on something, on a noise. And the sound pressure was just amazing. And I never forgot that. One time when you're standing and there's absolutely no sound anywhere, emanating from anywhere. I never forgot that. And yes, going back to what I said before the break, kintsugi is something I was thinking about because it's the art of healing. And I'm showing Steve a couple of pictures of what they do with broken pottery. And it's not hurting because of your pain and your suffering that you've gone through all your life. It's celebrating a new look. It's celebrating a new life. It's celebrating something completely new and really original too. Some of them are really cool and it's gold. You replace it with gold. Some of them are darker. Some of them are light. It's really beautiful. And it made me think of how, you know, how we all work. And it just, it meant a lot to me. And I really wanted to share that. So has anybody here heard of Dr. David Lipton? I'm wondering. Steve, have you heard of him? Dr. David Lipton, or Bruce Lipton, I'm sorry. He has something called Your Body is an Illusion. Oh, I'm sure Annie has. I knew it. And there's stuff that I want to share today from this because it blows me away. It really does. And I took the time to write it out. And I'm seeing so much of my healing in this. And this is what I wanted to speak about. It's a 10-minute video. And he talks so fast that, you know, it's like stop, rewind, stop, rewind, stop, rewind all the time. But, wow, you know. Okay, so he says in this one, we're made out of 50 trillion cells, okay? And these cells are living entities. So we're a community. We're not a single person. And you know, if you have a mind open, wow, you know, it makes a lot of sense. You're a community. You're not a single person. Every cell in your body has a minus voltage on the inside and a positive voltage on the outside. On the inside, I'm sorry. Every live cell is a battery. Every cell has 1.4 volts. Didn't he just say we had 50 trillion cells times 1.4 volts? That's 700 trillion volts of electricity in your body right now, according to him. And he said that with training and with meditation, you can focus the energy called chi, which is how you can use that energy for healing. Are you thinking what I'm thinking? This is what I've been trying to say for, what, 3 years now? In almost every single line, it's a colossal slap in the face to me because it's like, Luca, this is what you've been trying. Luca, this is, you know. And he says language was designed to hide feelings. Oh, it goes deeper. he says, when we were young, if we were taught to be sensitive to those vibrations, like we're energy waves, right? According to him. Okay, let me continue. So as you see yourself as a physical entity, he says, the new physics say, no, we are energy waves interacting with each other right now. He says, all animals and all plants communicate with vibration, right? Frequency. The antelope sure knows the frequency that the lion is giving out when they come face to face, okay? They don't have to, you know, she doesn't have to go and ask him, you know, if he's friendly or not. According to him, he says, you know, if we were taught to be sensitive to those vibrations, we wouldn't find ourselves in bad relationships and in bad places today. We're usually told not to go by our feelings, but to listen to what other people have to say. That's why he says language was designed to hide, to mask feelings. According to him, and he continues, the point is all organisms communicate by vibration, and they know that they're in a good place or a bad place by reading vibrations. We humans have that ability, but we're not trained to use that ability. Gut feeling is the same thing, yes. Yeah, see? But we're not trained for that because that's not what Rockefeller didn't want thinkers, right? He wanted workers. This all has to do with how they were training us and how they were brainwashing us. We're a lot more powerful than people think. When we see people, like, you know, if he looks at the audience where he is, we see people as physical particles and machines, but that's just an illusion because what we are interacting waves. That's why one person can affect another person just by being in the field. See, it's a whole different talk. It's a whole different way of speaking. It's a whole different set of words. In the field? Well, yeah. You know, today's physics is studying vibration, not physical. In quantum physics, he says they study the particle. they don't study the particle. They study the waves, and they study the waves' interference. All waves together are called the field. So you're made out of atoms, but you are also the field. And you're connected to everything because you can't separate the fields. So it's like he's actually proving that our thoughts, for example, aren't contained inside our head. Because he goes on to explain about with older technology, we have wires fixed to our brain, and that's how they can read what's going on, right? But with the new technology called MEG, which is magnetoencephalograph, did I say that right? Encephalograph? Yes, I did. Look at that. First time. The covering that they put on you doesn't even touch your head in order to read your brain activity. So you can read your brain activity outside of your head, which proves to him that your thoughts aren't contained in your head. He sees it as a wave, as waves enveloping us. And the waves become entangled with each other. That's what we do as human beings. That's how he sees it. People that you get connected to or entangled with, and many people are familiar with. For example, if you're thinking about somebody, remember you haven't thought about somebody for, let's say, years, and all of a sudden the phone rings and it's them, right? And then he talks about placebo and nocebo. If you're thinking positive thoughts of someone, and all of a sudden they make an effort to get in touch with you, right? But it works both ways. He says if you have negative thoughts about somebody, wherever they are, they can and they will create negative talk about you. And he says it's very important to recognize, and I've spoken about this before without even talking about this. It's really cool. This is at least sewing about three or four shows together that I can remember. He said it's really important to recognize your thoughts and your judgments are not just connected to you. They're connected to the people that you talk and think about. So people should know that. Let's say if they hit the right frequency, you can cause a crystal goblet to explode. If you hit the right frequency, and that's called, according to him, that's called harmonic resonance or constructive interference. And he says we're like a tuning fork with our brain. We're broadcasting frequencies and our thoughts. You know, which goblet is going to respond to our thoughts? Which one is harmonically resonant, right? That's what how long have I been talking about my disclaimer saying that this is what resonates with me? If you live in fear, you're not going to activate the Dalai Lama, but you might get Scarface to show up, right? That's good. That was cute. So when you're having thoughts, he says, you're exciting and activating those things in the world that are connected to those thoughts of yours. And he goes on to explain about like a mugger. How would a mugger know which person to pick out that he's going to attack? He chooses the one that has the most fear, right? The one that's most afraid, because that person will resonate. And it means the mugger doesn't have to do anything but say boo to a person like that, and he'll give him anything he wants because of fear. And while this works for groups of individuals, it apparently is a really powerful thing when you have a group of people together with the same thoughts. And he says you can't make war unless you have a lot of people that are ready to make war. He's got a really good example of mass action too. Yeah, I'd like to connect with other people through God is what I'd like. Yeah. Check this out. A mass action example he has, okay? This is a year after 9/11. This is 2002 on the same day in New York City. How many people do you think are thinking about 9/11 on that day, right? Guess what the winning lottery ticket number was? 9/11. Because, according to him, we collectively create the reality. You know, it's really cool. So you can take everything with a grain of salt, like we're supposed to. But it makes perfect sense to me. I love it. So when you're looking at yourself, you're not just looking at a single entity, but you're a community of 50 trillion cells. But then he says, well, wait now, community. You want to hear about community? Another thing that I've been talking about for I don't know how long, and how important it is to think of others and be selfless. You listen to this. Every cell is intelligent, but when they are a community, they automatically give up their personal intelligence and respond to the central voice. Central voice, meaning nocebo or placebo, meaning health or sickness or death. It's incredible. Let me say that again. Every cell is intelligent, but when they're a community, they give up their personal intelligence and respond to the central voice. You know, it's every person for the tribe. That's exactly how the native spirituality worked. That's how they worked. That's how the tribes flourished. So that community represents one thing called an organism. And in that community, a cell must follow what the central voice is. And if the central voice says to die, the cells will die. So that central voice is the mind. Okay? So then he goes on to explain how the mind works. The function of the brain, he says, is to perceive signals that it receives and to interpret them and then to send the information to the cells to control the behavior and the genetics. So the function of the brain is perception, and from that it creates the mind, right? So with placebo and nocebo, a positive thought of something can heal you. And I'm proof of that because that's all I've been doing since the beginning, since 2020, since I've gotten home. And even if you don't really know what you're taking, right? And in that case, that one time it was a sugar pill that the person took, but it wasn't the sugar pill that cured the person. It was the belief that the person was being healed. That's how strong your belief system is. If you believe you're going, if you believe something, it's going to happen. If you believe you're going to heal, it doesn't matter if it's real medicine or not. It's going to happen just like that. And I've seen it. He's seen it. So again, it's not the real pill itself that healed you. It's the thought that what you are taking is going to heal you that did. Stats reveal that 1/3 of all medical healings, including surgery, are the result of the placebo effect. A positive thought and therefore healing. How fast did I get out of that hospital? Oh my gosh, what was I saying? Get me out of here. How fast did I get out of that hospital? 2 days, I think it took. They were so sick and tired of me. You know, they were making me walk more than the other ones. You know, get them out of here, you know. Oh, okay, they have to make more room. No, they don't. They just wanted me out of there because I was, you know, it's the negative person. It's the person holding his finger up and I'm crying for more painkiller. That's what they want, right? And I was kind of the opposite. And this is what medicine, modern medicine, doesn't tell you, is that there's negative thinking that's called the nocebo effect. The same power that positive thinking can have to heal you, negative thinking can and will kill you. It's that simple. It's that dangerous. See, look at me. I'll give you a really good example. I'm trying to heal from 2020 from what? Two cancers? Two stage four cancers. No chemo, no radiation, no big pharma pills, and no vaccines, right? No bioweapons. But the subject that I'm talking about is devastating. The subjects that we're talking about on these shows, they're horrifying. They're devastating. They're, you know, they're stuff that nightmares are made out of. So how can I keep being healthy? Because that's what's feeding my health. Believe it or not, as strange as it may sound, you know, reporting on stuff like this and helping each and every one that I can of us know more and be able to live a good life, that's what I'm here for. I don't care if I die tomorrow. That's what I'm here for. you're not going to believe this one. Yes, you are. Negative thinking. Okay. Negative thinking can create all of the effects of chemotherapy. Let me repeat that. Negative thinking can create all of the effects of chemotherapy. That's a pretty heavy statement to make. If a doctor tells you that you have a disease, or a doctor tells you you're going to die, and you believe that doctor because he's the professional, then that belief will give you a disease and cause you to die. That's what you said. You know, God says, hey, you commanded it. This might not be popular, but this is kind of relevant. The Baptist fundamentalists in the South, in the southern states of the United States, the Baptist fundamentalists that work themselves up into a frenzy in their sacred beliefs, okay? They truly believe that God protects them, and they work with poisonous snakes, and they get bitten by them. There are pictures of, video of getting bitten by them, and nothing happens because they believe that the poison will not affect them. There's even recorded events of them drinking strychnine in a deadly poison in toxic doses, and they're still not affected by the poison because of their belief. That's how powerful your belief can be. So the question then becomes, well, if you can drink a toxic poison and have such a powerful and positive outcome, then why worry so much about everything toxic around us, like the air we breathe, the food, the water? If we have that much power inside us to control how we feel, what we do, you know? Look at me. I'm a prime example. The doctors didn't know what to do with me. The medical profession is, you know, in an uproar. If I keep talking to them, they'll get angry if I keep, you know, bringing up my healing. Oh, well, it's a miracle. No, it's not. No, it's not. You keep telling them that. Wow. No. My healing was just, all I did was want to heal. I said, no. More than want to. I said, I'm going to. That's it. You're going to. Dude, you know, I'm sitting here looking at my body. I'm going, you are going to heal. Mino. You know, in 2 days or 3 days, you're out of this hospital. You're coming home, and we're going to do something you have never seen before. And that was exactly what happened. And I tell you, it was, if you looked at my healing on a graph from the first day, it was up. I'd say it about 30 or 40 degrees, steady, straight up. Thank you, Melissa, for listening to my show before going to work. I hope you liked it. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And say hi to your better half for us. And thank you again for everybody. Oh, and you know what, Steve, I got to tell you this before I have it right here because I didn't want to forget. I have a solution for our border, Steve. I have a solution. Is everybody ready for this?
What's that?
I have a solution for the border. Crocodiles. That's all you have to do. You put crocodiles in the water. You introduce crocodiles in the water. Nothing will happen. You're fine. And case closed. Problem solved. And next week, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, analyzing morals, integrity. Oh, crocs in the water? I'm not going in there now. Oh, how come? Well, because I could get eaten up. Oh, and that's going to be on next week. It definitely will be, because I'm going to be asking, you know, what would you do if you could do anything, if you were 100% sure that you could get away with what you're doing without anybody knowing? How low would you stoop? How low would you go? That's the question. See, and when you take a curve to the negative, how much negative, how much to the negative? You can also ask the same thing to the positive, the other side. The people that you know, were not cared for and that were, you know, left to, 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 you know, fend for themselves, do what you want. You know, no, we're turning around, we're healing, and we're helping the very, very same people that didn't care for us to begin with. We have the doors open. You know, we're spreading love. You know, and like he said, you know, if you get slapped on one cheek, you give him the other. You know, thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you next week. Steve, try not to talk too much next time because, you know, really, like, it's kind of hard for me to interject when you're, you know, geez, you must have talked a lot today.
It's annoying, isn't it?
I hope everybody liked the show as much as I did. And we'll see you next week. That went by really quick, didn't it? Jeez. Anyway, thanks so much, everybody. And have a safe week.